Now on Sunday Extra, we're going to hear about the archaeologists who fought the Nazis and saved the treasures of ancient Greece. A mission that turned a team of classical historians and archaeologists into undercover spies. It sounds like it has all the makings of a Hollywood blockbuster, so it's perhaps no surprise that it grabbed the attention of our next guest, Stephen Tolte. The films Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks and Only the Brave followed books by Stephen, and his latest work is The American School of Spies. Stephen Tolte, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me.
So your book tells the story of what became known as the Greek Desk, Stephen.
It was a group of classicists and archaeologists who were recruited by the OSS, which was the forerunner to the CIA, and they wanted to insert them into Greece and Turkey to help them fight the Nazis. They knew the languages, they knew the culture, and so they basically turned academics into spies.
Obviously, with the imminent invasion of Greece by Germany, there were fears about what would happen to the great treasures of Greek antiquity. Could you tell us a little bit about the efforts of the National Museum ahead of that invasion to preserve the cultural heritage?
Sure. They knew that Hitler was obsessed with Greek antiquities. He, as an artist, as the person who believed that the Aryans began in Greece and they were the actual forerunners of the modern Germans, they knew that he wanted to possess the statues and take over Greece, basically. So what they did is they created all these hiding places for their most precious antiquities. They buried them underneath the floors of the National Archaeological Museum. They hid them in caves. They hid them in private homes, in wells. So they wanted to either delay or stop the theft of their cultural heritage, and they were largely successful.
To what extent did the Nazis sort of get wind of this and actually manage to uncover the real assets? And to what extent were efforts to provide them with fakes also successful?
Well, the Germans knew that the major statues, the famous ones that we see in photographs, had to be near the museum. And they figured out that they were underneath the property. What they didn't know was that some of the artifacts were being sold on the street as authentic. There was German soldiers, just privates and corporals, who wanted a keepsake. And so they would produce, the Greeks would produce actual figurines and jewelry that were said to be on antiquities when they were really just made in a secret factory in Athens. So the Germans felt that they were going to possess Greece for 1,000 years. So they weren't in a total hurry to steal its treasures. But what they did is looted some archaeological digs on the orders of Hitler to sort of show that there was a link between Germany and Greece, which of course was a completely false link, but it's what Hitler wanted to hear.
One of the key themes of the book is that sense of identity with ancient Greece emanating from Nazi Germany, but also the importance of ancient Greece in the identity and mythology of the United States as well. Would that be a fair comment?
Yes. So many of the archaeologists who volunteered felt that they owed a debt to Greece. Greece was the birthplace of democracy. It was really where Western civilization had its start. And many people in Greece saw America as sort of the new Athens. This was the new home of democracy. And they felt there was sort of a duty there to protect the antiquities that had sort of transferred this heritage to America. So many of the Greeks thought that the Americans would rescue them. And the Americans really felt that they had a duty to help the Greeks because they received so much in wisdom and so much in sort of beauty from their art and artifacts.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with author Stephen Tolte about his new book, The American School of Spies. Stephen, there are certainly some amazing characters whose escapades you recount in the book. I wonder if you could introduce us to a couple of them. The first one, codename Pigeon, but real name Rodney Young.
Rodney Young was the head of the Greek Desk. He was an archaeologist who worked in the ancient marketplace in Athens called the Agora. And he was brilliant at choosing spies, but also he had to really create his own sort of merchant marine. He had to get supplies and guns and bullets and medical care into Greece and get refugees out and informants out. So he had to create this whole sort of world, not only spies, but he had to go find tanks to steal their engines for the boats that were going into Greece. He had to find gold ingots to pay his informants inside Greece. And so he was sort of the master showman who put this all together. and basically ran the Greek squad from his base in Egypt.
Could you tell us a little bit about Rodney Young's background?
Yeah, he was an archaeologist. He was also the heir to a beer fortune here in America. So he was a child of privilege, and his father had taught him. His father was a member of the Red Cross, a leader of the Red Cross in New Jersey. And he taught him noblesse oblige, that you had to give back to a world that had given the family so much. So while all his friends went to Madison Avenue or went to sort of Wall Street, he volunteered to go dig in the dirt in Athens and fell in love with the stories of Zeus and the stories of sort of the civilization that he fell in love with. So he was a guy who could have chosen many different paths, but what he decided to do with his life is devote it to Greek relics and Greek culture.
He also, I understand, drove an ambulance, which he bought himself during the war. Could you tell us about that?
Right. Americans weren't allowed to join the Greek army, and America hadn't entered the war yet. So he volunteered to be an ambulance driver, just like Hemingway. So he would go to the front, cheer up the nurses and the soldiers there, drive the injured back down from the front lines to the field hospitals. And, you know, in the process, a bomb landed near his ambulance, and he was hit by the shrapnel. So he almost lost his life in service of Greece, something he did twice during the war.
Another very big character in the book is the man known as Wild Bill, William J. Donovan. Could you tell us about him, Stephen?
Sure. He was the head of the OSS, and he was briefed with creating a spy agency basically out of nothing. So he turned to basically the Ivy League. He looked for the best and brightest among the colleges like Harvard and Yale, and trusted them to go into the countries where they'd excavated before. They knew the language and they knew the culture, and basically form relationships that would turn into a spy network. You know, he's famous for basically creating the modern day CIA, but he had a real eye for talent, for espionage talent. And I think he chose the right people for this mission.
What was the network of people involved in this mission? Could you sort of sketch it out for us and give us a sense of the range of roles that were performed by the Greek desk operatives?
There was a woman named Dorothy Cox who would meet the refugee ships coming over from Greece. And she would talk to these people fleeing Nazism and find information and find spies within their ranks. So she was competing with the British to get the best information. So that information was sent back to Athens and other parts of Greece, telling their agents were implanted in the different cities how to perform, what restaurants to go to, what happens when their phone sort of started rotating backward. That meant the central office was listening to your telephone calls. So she created like a manual for spies in Athens. Other people just ran agents. They had guys inside Athens and places like Salonika, and basically got information on troop movements, on ships resupplying the Nazi troops, and turned that over to the air assets, who would bomb the harbors when the Germans were offloading either men or material. And they also tried to prevent the troops from leaving Greece and going to the front in France after D-Day. They wanted to slow down the British reaction to the invasion of Europe. So they did play a key part in sort of supporting D-Day and keeping the Nazis kind of locked up in Greece.
Stephen, how common was the use of archaeologists and classicists as spies, and what dangers did that bring to anyone who was involved in the field of archaeology?
You know, in World War I, it was very controversial. Franz Boas, one of the most famous archaeologists at the time, thought that the British using archaeologists was sort of a travesty. It was, being an archaeologist was sort of a sacred trust, and their work involved all of humanity. So he didn't want them fighting on one side. He also thought it was dangerous that if archaeologists became spies, that spies would become targets, and the classicists would become just like any other sort of soldier in war. So the Nazis actually took that up and said that any archaeologist in the field who's caught, you know, giving information to the Allies is going to be executed just like a common criminal.
By 1944, Rodney Young, as you describe it, was overseeing a daunting array of missions across Greece with all sorts of code names: Emeralds, Helios, Lucian, Oracle, Operation Honeymoon. What are your favorites, Stephen?
I think it would have to be Operation Honeymoon. That involved a spy named Cicero, who was a Turkish man who had infiltrated the British ambassador's home and was feeding information to Berlin for a price. And he got really amazing information about D-Day. He correctly predicted when it was coming, where it was coming. And to sort of stop him from being believed, he had to be indicated to be a double agent. So we had an American spy working alongside him who reported him to the Americans and to the British. And the Allies were able to sort of neutralize his information to the Nazis. So they didn't believe what he was saying. They thought the information was just too much and too good. Had they believed them, the story of D-Day would have been much, much worse for the Allies. So the Greek desk helped get that American spy out of Turkey to keep the true identity of Cicero a secret.
And who was that spy who was evacuated?
Her name was Cornelia. She was just a secretary, the son of a German ambassador. And she had grown up in America, had her first boyfriend in America. So she was sort of loyal to the country for emotional reasons. And when she got to Turkey, she was appalled by what the Nazis were doing. So she turned code, basically not for money, but just for loyalty to democracy and freedom, and risked her life to protect them.
Stephen, the story of the American School of Spies really is an extraordinary one. As I said, it has all the makings of a blockbuster movie. How did you come to it?
You know, I just came across some pictures on the internet of archaeologists lowering these huge Greek statues into the ground. There was no sort of context. And I had been to Athens before. I loved the antiquities there. And I just wanted to know what was behind that story. And these were the Greek curators protecting their monuments against the invading Nazis. So it really just started with the photo that intrigued me. And I dug behind it and sort of found the personalities who made that mission happen.
What sort of source material were you able to work with in pulling together this dramatic story?
You know, I found the families of several members of the Greek desk, and they talked to me about their parents and what it meant to serve Greece in this way. I also found two memoirs by a Greek agent who was operating out of Salonika and had many adventures, one of the point men for the Greek desk inside Greece. And he sort of gave the blow-by-blow account of what happened day to day as they tried to stop these troops from leaving to go to France and fight. Because one thing that he didn't realize at the time was that many of them were carrying actual artifacts in their backpacks. They wanted a souvenir of the wartime and of their war experience. So not only was he sort of helping to win the war, he was helping to keep those relics inside Greece.
What happened to Rodney Young and some of the other prominent characters that you've described for us after the war, Stephen?
Almost all of them went back to their first love, which was archaeology. Rodney went to Turkey and made a huge discovery, and he found the tomb of the father of the King of Midas, which was a major find in the 50s and 60s. So he had a fabulous career in archaeology after the war. He hired Dorothy Cox to work with him, one of his main agents in the Greek desk. You know, they were part-time spies. They were sort of fish out of water who served their country and also served their second country of Greece, and then went back to their true vocation after the war.
Looking back at the Greek desk operations, how significant do you think it was in both the war effort, but then also the development of the United States international espionage architecture?
You know, Greece was not a major theater of the war, but they did have a sort of an underrated part in helping D-Day to thrive and survive. Had the troops gone from Greece immediately to the French front and had spies like Cicero been able to sort of tell the German high command what was actually going on, D-Day could have gone off differently. So I think that is a major sort of point in the favor of the Greek desk. After the war, Greece became sort of a focal point between the United States and Soviet Union. Was sort of one of the battlegrounds in the Balkans where the Cold War first developed. So I think the information and the spy networks that these guys set up helped us in that battle against, you know, world communism, against Moscow's advances in Europe, and sort of left a legacy for these archaeologist spies.
It's an absolutely rollicking story, dramatically told. Stephen Tolte, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Great to be here.
And Stephen's book is The American School of Spies, The Archaeologists Who Fought the Nazis and Saved the Treasures of Ancient Greece.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.